We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 176. The Yankees have swept the Twins, kicked them back to Minnesota. It might have been a preview of the wild card series. If it is, you got to be feeling pretty good as a Yankees fan because they beat them every which way. Monday, they beat them in a close pitcher's duel. Tuesday, Sabathia pitched great, and then today, a blowout.
Well, I guess we have nothing else to talk about. We just went through the entire thing. It's perfect. That's it. No, this was perfect. This was exactly what the Yankees needed. The Minnesota Twins come into town, and the Yankees just pretty much take it to them. And there were some close games, which is good. I think the Yankees actually showed some moxie this weekend or this week as well when the Twins came in and showed that they can actually win a close game, which is something we haven't seen in a while with the amount of one-run losses. So this was a huge confidence boost for the team, and I think on the fan base side, a lot of expectations have changed.
I still feel obliged to say we're still going for the division. The goal is to win the AL East. Girardi is spewing that stuff. Everyone in the organization is saying our goal is still to win the AL East. And the Yankees have done everything in their power to do that. They're 8-10 in their last, or 8-2 in their last 10 ball games. They've been playing unbelievable baseball in the month of September. The only problem is the Red Sox are doing the same thing. So it's just really hard to catch them right now. 7 games up on the wild card, though, that's, I'm not saying it's locked up, but feeling pretty confident that the Yankees are going to be hosting that one game wild card if it comes down to that. But like I said, still obliged to say for now, with 10 games left in the season, we're still going for that division.
Yeah, definitely still are going for the division. That's not changed. The Yankees keep winning ball games, but like you said, unfortunately, the freaking Red Sox win ball games with like extra inning wins on wild pitch. Like they're winning in ridiculous ways too. It's starting to really piss me off. The Orioles are starting to really piss me off. The Rays already pissed me off. Yeah, so these guys are just laying down, basically, and the Red Sox are taking advantage of it. But the Red Sox, I mean, got to give them credit down the stretch, too. They're winning the games that they need to win. They must feel the heat of the Yankees because the Yankees have put the accelerator on, and unfortunately, it just hasn't happened. But the wild card, like you said, that's locked up. I mean, it's locked up. Let's all be honest. That shit's locked up.
Well, 10 games left with a 7-game lead. It's fairly locked up.
Yeah, this would be an epic collapse if that were to not be the case. I do not see that coming.
Let's not even go down that rabbit hole at this point.
But the division's still in play. Here's the weird thing, because we have some things to straighten out with if there's a tie, because I'm actually torn on how we finish the season.
Yes, and I think I know where you're going with that. Before that, though, we've been reminding people about September 30th event. We are hosting an event at the Bronx Brewery before the game against the Blue Jays. It's a 4 o'clock game. For $59, you get a game ticket in section 205 or 206. That's the second level in right field, right in the outfield, where Didi hit his home run today, right behind Judge. Last time out, you can watch the video on all our social media channels. We had Susan Waldman, big heads, John Sterling, big heads, Mike Francesa, big heads. It was an awesome time. In that $59, you get the game ticket, a t-shirt that was designed by Scott, Chase for 28. It's fire. Plus, you get 2 free beers on us at the pregame party and then $4 pints after that. What more do I need to say, Scott?
Nothing. It's just a perfect way to celebrate this amazing season. It's a, you know, we're going to be basically pushing these guys into the playoffs. I do believe that weekend is going to be significant in the division, because I'm still holding on to the fact that the Red Sox are going to lose a couple games this week, and the Yankees are just going to keep pressing forward. So I really do think that, while I don't think the wild card is in question anymore, I do believe that this division is still going to come down to that last weekend. So we very well could have a very crucial game. If not, nonetheless, it's $59. Come watch a game. Hang out. We got about 100 people right now signed up. It's going to be fun at the brewery. And then there's playoff baseball around the corner. So it's a beautiful way to celebrate and have some fun.
It's bad on you, MLB, for scheduling having no Yankees-Red Sox games in the month of September. Couldn't you have foreseen that this was going to come down? Do not do that again next year. At least put one series late in September that we can potentially have. Imagine if the Yankees were playing the Red Sox the last weekend of the season, and it was 2 or 3 games. That would be unbelievable.
Well, theoretically, I mean, everybody thought that the Blue Jays were going to have some say in this division, right? I mean, they pretty much fell off the face of the planet, but the Blue Jays were supposed to do something, at least a little bit, and they've just not panned out, obviously. So what could have been a very big series between the Blue Jays if they were in the thick of things is turning out to be, you know, the decisions will be handled at two different stadiums on those days. So
I believe, you know, that you and I declared the Blue Jays dead after their 1-9 start. That was back in the second week of April.
Yeah, it's pretty smart baseball guys right here to know that, to see the writing on the wall that early in the season. Yes. I mean, it was pretty obvious that their entire pitching staff was going to be hurt.
We also want to take a second to remind you guys to rate and review the podcast. We tell you on every episode, and you guys are coming through recently. There's some awesome reviews Scott and I were just going through. We do still plan on reading them on air. We just have to figure out the right way to do that. We want to make it sort of a funny, fun segment. So that will be coming, but keep those reviews coming. It's awesome. It helps us out tremendously. It boosts us in the ratings, which gets more listeners, which allows Scott and I to make more and better shows. Also, light up the voicemail line, 646-480-0342. The Yankees just, like we said, pretty much clinched the home field wild card against the Twins by sweeping them.
I can say this. You can't say this. I can say that. You can't say that.
Fire up those voicemails, 646-480-0342. Let us know how pumped you are for that one-game playoff. Also, submit mailbag questions at bronxpinstripes.com/podcast. We had a great set of mailbags last week, Scott, on Monday's show, so keep those coming as well.
Yeah, and I know the voicemail line was definitely getting hit up quite a bit today. I sent out a tweet from the podcast email or Twitter account, and it was definitely getting lit up. So keep those coming. Let's get some thoughts entering what we think is going to be the playoffs, and let us, you know, give or take 30 seconds, and we will roll those all out this weekend. We didn't put them on last week because honestly, there were a few of them, and some of them were like the sound was terrible. I don't know. Sometimes you guys are calling from like a stairwell, and it sounds like something's happening. I don't know what's
under
going
their
on.
Desk at work or something like
yeah
that.
It's like a Costanza sleeping in her desk situation, yeah. but yeah, we're gonna roll them out. We should have a good amount of them for this week, so. And that's one of my favorite parts of the show. As one of the guys on the show, that's my favorite part of the show because I don't like listening to myself. I like listening to you guys.
That's what my dad actually told me. His favorite part is the voicemail segment. I'm like, I'm not even talking during that segment.
that's pretty telling.
One thing I'd like to hear in the voicemail. So this might not even be a rant, but just a take. Girardi's going to have an interesting thing with the lineup because the whole first base, third base situation with Headley, Frazier, and Greg Bird all hitting right now and all playing pretty well. Only two of those guys can potentially play in that wild card. So let us know in the voicemail line who you think should play in that one game wild card, and also throw in some fire takes in there. All right, Scott, you mentioned briefly that we need to clarify if the Yankees and Red Sox finish tied at the end of the season. We had said a while ago that tiebreaker would automatically go to the Yankees because they have the season series. That's false.
Wrong.
I thought I read that somewhere. I thought I saw someone legitimate tweet that. So even though they may have done that, it was wrong. They will have to play a one-game playoff to decide who the division winner is, and then the loser of that game will play the wild card game. So I think where you were going with this is, do we even want that? Because that totally screws the losing team.
Yeah, it's actually something very interesting to look at, because if you have to go into a situation like that, you're playing on Saturday, you're playing on Sunday, then you got to go and play on Monday against the Red Sox if we were to tie them.
At home, it would be at Yankee Stadium.
It would be at Yankee Stadium, but you still have to do a one-game play-in game at that point to get to the wild card game. If the team who loses that has to play the next day. So the potential of going to that game, losing that game, and then playing the next day is kind of crazy. I don't know. I feel like I want to play in one play-in game, not two.
Well, technically, you're only in one play-in game because even if you lose the first game, it's double elimination, essentially. Right. But who would you throw in that one game division game? Would you throw Severino? Would you throw Sonny Gray? Would you sort of hedge your bets and say, we're going to save Severino just in case we have a do or die tomorrow night? And then if we don't and we win, great. Then we have Severino ready to go in game one of the division series. There's a whole, it totally screws both the Yankees and Red Sox. for not that much benefit. I mean, you benefit that you automatically go to the division series, but you get that already if you're the wild card team. So for the Yankees right now, looking at it, three games behind Boston, Boston's winning again. It's really not that much gain to go play that that one game division playoff.
No, because you have to get, so the Yankees would have to gain four games now in 10 days.
11 days.
11 days, 10 games.
11 games. 11 games.
So that's a lot to do. I mean, granted, three is a lot to do, but four is even, I mean, it's one more than three, but it's a lot to do. So, yeah, I'm not totally set on winning that division at this point when you're seeing what would be in front of you if you were to tie them. It's almost like you don't want to tie them because you'd rather just play the one game and know what you're doing. See, what's worse, knowing what you're doing or not knowing what you're doing and then playing one and then going home, or just playing against the Red Sox and then having the opportunity, if you do lose, to go another day? I don't know. I don't really know. To me, I'd rather set myself up for success.
Yeah,
and playing that one game.
And if you lose that first game, it's like, and then you're playing the next night, that's almost like consolation prize. I feel like it's a complete letdown. And it totally benefits the second wildcard team, which is seven games behind you right now. Those second wildcard teams, the Twins, the Angels, the Rangers, possibly the Mariners are still hanging around. They really have no business playing with the Yankees. The Yankees are a much better, more complete team. That doesn't mean they'll definitely win, because one game, anything can happen. But the Yankees are a way better team than all those teams, and we saw it this week against the Twins.
Yeah, so that's the conundrum, I guess, for the team. I mean, granted, you're going to get balls to the wall every day. These guys are going to be going after it. And here's the deal. I mean, if they see a little chink in the armor, if they see that Boston loses a game tomorrow or the next day and the Yankees keep winning and they're one out, like, it's right there in front of you. There's a lot more pressure. So if you win, if Boston loses and you keep winning, even one or two games, there's a lot more pressure than on Boston. You know, good things can happen then for the Yankees, because I feel like that kind of pressure with a team that's as thin as Boston is, granted, they're top heavy, their starters are phenomenal, they're good. But once you get beyond any of that stuff, and honestly, beyond Chris Sale, it's tough sledding for them. So I don't know. It's a very interesting situation.
What do you do if you're Girardi and it's Sunday, the last game of the season, and you're one game behind the Red Sox? Do you throw Severino?
No. On Sunday?
On Sunday.
Hell no.
What if you're tied with the Red Sox?
Man, see, that's a... No.
So then, I mean, so in that sense, then you really don't give a shit if you win the division.
Well, you're burning Severino on Sunday, and then if you do lose on Monday, you're really
screwed.
Granted. Well, let's talk about this real quick, because granted, we're talking about Severino being the end all be all, and
it's not. Yeah.
Well, yeah, we're kind of contradicting what we were talking about last week, because what we were talking about around Thursday was that Girardi does have options. He does have the ability to go with Tanaka, who's pitching a hell of a lot better, Sonny Gray, who's got good postseason experience, CeCe, who I guarantee he'd be very confident in throwing out in a game like that, especially against the Red Sox.
Yeah, that just piqued my interest. Maybe you throw CeCe if you go into that one-game playoff.
So it's he's got options. It's not like Severino's the only thing, whereas you're the Red Sox and you have Chris Sale. Like, that's your guy that you feel confident in. There aren't very many people behind him that you feel super confident in. So, you know, it puts the Red Sox in more of a predicament to me than the Yankees, because of the Yankees' depth. I mean, this is just, again, speaks to how deep this team is in every facet of the game right now. I mean, they're deep on the starting rotation. They're very deep in the bullpen. And their offense can match up with anybody. They're deep at practically every position.
While you're right that Severino's not the end-all be-all, we're going to talk about this a little bit later in the show, but the way they shuffled and then reshuffled the rotation this week tells you that Severino is their guy. So
yes,
they're doing everything they can to make sure Severino is lined up for Tuesday, what is it, October 3rd, as the one-game wild card. So that's what they're building towards. So while he's not the end-all be-all, that's what there is in their mind. So maybe, yeah, they still plan for that, and then they could throw Sabathia or Tanaka or Sonny Gray or somebody, and you'd feel confident with any one of those guys, but you're not as confident as you are in Severino.
And that's the thing. I think what they're doing right now, and I think what Joe is doing, is he's got a plan for that wild card game. Because right now you're 3 games back. And you can't do anything but win games. And you can't control what the Red Sox do. So control is completely out of their hands at this point. What they can control is the fact that they are going to play on that Tuesday night game. And who is going to throw and how it sets up for that Tuesday night game. Everything else, to me, what I think Joe will do is, kind of like you said, if there were a game on Sunday that would, you know, if we were tied and, you know, we had to win and the Red Sox had to lose, I think Joe would just kind of have confidence in whoever he would throw at that point, whether it's CeCe or Tanaka or even Sonny Gray. I think at that point, you're just kind of rolling with what you've got, going to put your best effort out there and, you know, kind of let the cards, you know, lay as they are. So, and then you're still set up for that Tuesday. That's the game plan.
Yeah, and the way MLB has organized the schedule the last weekend, they're all flex games. So it's not like we can even wait around to see what the Red Sox do, because they're going to be first pitch at the same exact time.
Yes, most likely. That's what they'll do. But the Saturday games will be flexed out, so you'll be able to at least know beforehand. I mean, that Saturday game that we have tickets to could be a 7 o'clock game. They could flex it from a 4 to a 7. That's a possibility. To put one of them in prime time if for the Red Sox were to lose. I don't know what time the Red Sox game is that Saturday, but, you know, leading up to that weekend, depending on what happens this week or next week, then I think you'll see some of these games shift.
The reality is, if they end up do flexing it, that's kind of good news for the Yankees. That means that they're in a position to maybe win the division.
No, exactly. That means it's a higher intensity game. The game means something and they want to put it in prime time. So that's a good thing if the Yankees get flexed to a later time, because you can't flex earlier, from what I understand. You can flex later, and that would be just really to prime time it.
From what we understand. And also, I'm just sorry for throwing out there that the Yankees would automatically get that tiebreaker. I apologize to everyone. I don't know if people... I know I told that to a lot of people, so so there's egg on my face. Just know that.
All right. Well, the bottom line is the Yankees took care of business. Monday night was the first start, because when you go with Jaime Garcia against his former team, that's one, you got a guy with a chip on his shoulder who's going in. He's got two chips on his shoulder, actually. He's got a chip on each shoulder. One against the Twins for getting rid of him after, 6 days? And the other one for Girardi pulling him so early. You know damn well he wanted to go out there and pitch a ridiculous game.
Dude nutted up. It was his best start in a Yankee uniform. 5 2/3 innings pitched, 4 hits, 1 run, and it was an unearned run. 9 strikeouts. He struck out the side in the first inning. I was at the game on Monday night, and I was dumbfounded, shocked at him striking out the side. I did not imagine that Jaime Garcia had that sort of stuff.
I didn't know he had that hate in his heart for the Twins, but apparently he does. And the hate in the heart for being shown up on in public by Joe Girardi, because I guarantee that was something that he did not like. That blood, Hispanic blood started boiling over, and he started like, you know, the only way for me to show it is on the field, and I'm going to prove these guys wrong. And he started screaming at them in Spanish. It's beautiful. I love it. One, he pitched very, very well. Maybe he gave the confidence to some people that he could be a long guy. Not saying that's the case, but just saying he's auditioning for that at this point too.
This game was interesting, this Monday game, because this was a must-win for the Twins. They had Ervin Santana going, who's their number one pitcher. He's probably going to get the ball in a wild card situation against Jaime Garcia, who isn't even the Yankees' number five. He's probably the Yankees' number six. If you're the Twins and you want to sniff that first wild card spot, you basically had to come in here and sweep the Yankees. So Monday's was a crucial game. Santana pitched okay, although I feel like the Yankees had him on the ropes. They just couldn't get to him. Judge hit the home run in the first inning, and he kind of settled in a little bit. But this was a must-win game for the Twins, and the Yankees got it done.
No doubt about it. And the Twins just came out like you said, they had everything to gain from this series. Every single thing to gain this series. And everything to lose. I mean, it was such a crucial situation. To me, it told you a lot about what that Twins team is, honestly. Like, I just remember, what did I say last time? Send those little bitches back to Minnesota, because that's what they are, and that's exactly what they proved to be. They did not show up. The Yankees took care of them, and Jaime Garcia going out there, I don't know if that's an indictment as much on Garcia coming out and throwing really well, or the Twins just not having a good approach and game plan for Jaime freaking Garcia.
Whatever it was, yeah. But what did you think of Santana's performance, though? Because I'm thinking back on it. It's like, I feel like the Yankees, that's a frustrating game because they had runners on base, and again, they just couldn't come through with the hits. They got the 2 runs, which is all they needed. But if they're probably going to see him in the one game wild card if they play Minnesota.
Yeah, he's just one of those guys who's been around for a long time. He knows how to pitch, and he knows how to get in and out of spots. I mean, I feel like he's a guy who's very confident in his abilities. He knows just different situations, and he's been through so many of them. He's been on a lot of teams now.
Anaheim. I think they're just Anaheim and the Twins, right?
I thought he was in the National League for a minute, too.
Possibly.
He's been around for a while, and the guy is just one of those crafty veteran pitchers. So does it surprise me that he comes out and pitches well and pitches to the detriment of the Yankees and making, you know, finding their weaknesses and really hitting on those? He's got good accuracy. The guy knows how to throw the ball over the plate. And when you have guys like that, if they're on and mixing up their pitches, they're going to be harder to hit. I think those are the type of pitchers that this lineup is a lot more susceptible to. Rather than an overpowering guy. I think the overpowering guys the Yankees can match up pretty well with. It's the guys who can nibble, throw a lot of strikes, and can outcraft you. Those are the guys that scare me again with our lineup.
The Dallas Keuchel, crafty lefty, they're just frustrating as hell kind of pitchers.
Yeah, well, plus we have a lot of young guys too, especially when we're talking about a postseason situation or a playoff-like game. They're most likely in the beginning of the game at least is going to come out pressing a little bit. I mean, that's to be expected. So when you have a bunch of young guys either overswinging or gripping the bat too much or just trying to do too much too early, and you got a crafty guy out there who's going to just throw one more changeup when in a fastball count, you know, that's the guy that's going to get a lot of swings and misses or at least get guys off balance when you have an offense that's trying to do too much too early. So, you know, hopefully the blend of vets and young guys can kind of settle that down and we don't see that type of thing. But a lot of times you do see that type of outcome with a young lineup.
I'm just looking at Santana's baseball reference page. If you had to guess, what year was he a rookie?
Santana was a rookie in 2006.
Oh, that's good. It's pretty good. It's 2005. He's been around 13 years. The Angels for a long time, then made a stint in Kansas City and then Atlanta and then Minnesota. You said he's a crafty veteran, knows how to do a lot of things. One thing he doesn't know how to do is pass PED tests.
Oh yeah, he's a PED guy. See, I can't even remember who PED guys are and who they're not.
Yeah, he signed a contract in Minnesota and then immediately got suspended.
Yeah. Well, that's a shame. Is he the one that has five names too? Is that like his real name? Or
no,
did he change names?
No, you're thinking of Fausto Carmona.
Right, who used to be.
I don't even remember.
Yeah, there's a couple. It was a Minnesota Twins, but he was a lefty Twins pitcher, right?
Oh, no.
Who am I thinking of? Who's the guy that I think he came up? I think he was there when Johan Santana was there, too. Can't think of his name.
Not Francisco Liriano. He doesn't have multiple names. The guy I'm thinking of, Carmona, was from Cleveland. Carmona was his first name he told everyone, and then he gave everyone a new name, his real name, whatever.
Michael Williams.
quickly, we got to talk about Betances on Monday. He looked terrible. Could not throw strikes. He only threw 6 pitches for strikes out of 17 balls. Out of 17 pitches. Walked 2 batters, hit a guy, loaded the bases. Chapman had to come in and dig out of his mess. I was looking up some numbers on Betances and Chapman, and just by the eye test, I was like, I don't think they've each been performing at the same time. And it's pretty true. They had a good April. Both of them had a good April. But then in May, Chapman had a 10.8 ERA. Betances was literally lights out, 0 ERA. June, Chapman comes back and is lights out, 1.93 ERA. Betances is up to 4.5. July, Chapman has a good July. Betances has a bad July. Chapman has a terrible August. He gets demoted from the closer role. Betances is lights out, 1.5 ERA. Now, September, Chapman is lights out again, and Betances has an 8.53 ERA. What the hell is going on? Why can't we get our eighth and ninth guys pitching well at the same time?
I don't know, but throughout that last stint, ever since we've gotten David Robertson, that guy's been pretty much lights out. He's had maybe one or two bad little outings, nothing like what Betances. Betances, when he's bad, he's freaking terrible. You cannot have a guy coming in a crucial situation, walking people and just not throwing strikes. You can't have a guy in an eighth inning coming in with a tie game and walking guys. It just cannot happen. You cannot bring that guy in. So I don't know what Joe's got to do this week, this next week of baseball, a week and a half of baseball to get him right, or whatever the hell Betances needs to do to get him right. But this guy cannot be brought in crucial situations if he's not throwing strikes. And he can't throw the fastball for a strike, which is freaking baffling. Like, we all know that his best pitch is that curveball. That's the one he feels the most comfortable with. But he can't throw the fastball over the plate. It's mind-boggling how you can't throw a fastball over the plate. It really is kind of crazy.
And it's not a secret anymore. It's out. And do you remember back in the All-Star game, Bryce Harper saying, all you got to do is take against this guy and he's going to walk you? That's when it all really started for Betances. He wasn't able to throw his fastball for a strike. And I don't give a crap. We've said this before. And like you just said, I don't care how good your curveball is. If you don't have a fastball that you can throw for a strike, you're not going to get anybody out. And
your curveball means nothing if you can't throw your 100-mile-an-hour fastball over the plate. It means nothing.
Right. He's got to show it, and he hasn't been able to show it. And I think what Joe's going to have to do is pitch him in like he did Chapman in the sixth, maybe even the fifth inning for the next 10 games. And if he's looking good again, then maybe you have confidence using him in a close game in the wild card game or the playoffs. But I'm sorry, Betances, you have lost your setup man duties right now. Chapman's been great, so he's the closer again. I would much rather see David Robertson, Chad Green, or Tommy Canley in a close game right now just because they can actually throw the ball over the plate.
No, it's got to be done, and it's got to be a swift action. Joe can't be dicking around with this type of move. Betances, if he's going to take such a hard line like he did with Chapman, then why not do it with Betances? Because Betances is obviously jacked up right now. We got to get these two guys going. Chapman looked like a man possessed on Monday night. I mean, the way that he was doing that stare down after jacking it up to like 104 miles an hour. By the way, I looked up I was looking at some of the Statcast numbers today too. And I was just curious as to where Chapman was as hardest ball thrown. Because honestly, I thought that if you were to predict of the top 20 fastest balls thrown this year in Major League Baseball, how many of them do you think it was Chapman?
I would say 10, 50%.
All of them.
20. All of them?
Yeah, it might have been 25. It was all every single pitcher, every single pitch that he threw or that was on that Statcast list was Aroldis Chapman. And then I think it got back down to the next guy was Joe Kelly, and it was like 102-1. But everybody, every other pitch above that was Chapman. I thought that, like, this is something that we, I think, sometimes forget. Like, we all know that this guy throws really hard. But at the same time, we all have thought that the league has caught up to the type of fastball. And yes, the league is throwing a lot harder. The league is throwing at 100 miles an hour up. And I'm talking about the top 20. I mean, there's a, you know, it's like 103 to 104, all of those 20 pitches. So he's still a level above everybody else when it comes to velocity. He's still got that one more tick than every single other person in Major League Baseball. So when he is on, he is still that dominant guy. And I heard him talking about how he changed his grip back to different on his four seam, and he's getting more of that life on the ball. There's just a couple different, like, it sounded like it was more of a grip thing than it was a mechanical thing, which is very interesting. But yeah, he's a guy that is just absolutely dominant. And if Betances can't do it in the eighth inning, you got to flush him back, and you got to do it fast because there's only a week left of baseball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. We had always said that we're not seeing a velocity issue with Chapman. It's a location issue. Yeah, he might not be walking a ton of people, but if you're throwing a 103-mile-an-hour fastball right down the middle of the plate, they can at least foul it off and then keep going and extend the at-bat and maybe put it in play. But he was locating on Monday night. He's been locating the entire month of September. If you're locating 103 on the outer corner of the plate, the batter is toast.
Well, he's also locating that slider too, which is so crucial for him. We've talked about his slider, that it's not the greatest slider, but it doesn't have to be. If you have the movement that he's had, you know, throughout his career with that fastball, and then you're throwing at 103 to 104 miles per hour, and then you can throw a get me over slider. I mean, I'm not giving it enough credit. It's better than that. It's not a great slider, but it's a good slider, average to good slider. But that's all it needs to be. And he's got to throw it for strikes, or at least down in the zone, so it looks like a fastball coming out of his hand. Filthy. You cannot stop that. You cannot stop that.
Does Betances' fastball need to be better than Chapman's slider? If you understand what I'm saying.
Yes, it does. Because Chapman can, if Chapman's locating that fastball and he's got that movement back on it, it's not flat, it's getting swings and misses, he can live off of that fastball.
Right.
But Betances, if he can't find that fastball and throw it over the plate, then the curveball literally is meaningless. It means nothing. Because all they do is sit and wait for a curveball. And every single person who comes up in that batter's box will be able to hit it if they're not looking for the fastball. If the fastball's not in the back of the mind of the hitter for Betances, he's screwed. They're either going to walk or take a really good swing off of that curveball.
Yep. And Jared Diamond said it a couple weeks ago when we had him on. Yeah, Betances has the ability to be maybe the most dominant relief pitcher on any given batter or any given inning in the entire league. It's just that he doesn't do it consistently. It's extremely frustrating. And he wasn't available Tuesday night. Girardi went to Green, D-Rob, and Chapman to close out the game. Picked up right where CeCe left off, which was 6 innings and 2 runs, 5 strikeouts. He ended up retiring 10 batters in a row after he gave up the homer to Kepler. So Sabathia bounced back after a bad start his last time out.
Yeah, and he looked really good. I thought he was, you know, once he gave up that home run, he locked in. It seems like sometimes CeCe needs that like moment of you know, trepidation where he can be like, all right, no more, that's it, I'm done at this point. Yeah, and then just shuts everything down and like locks in. So whatever he needs to get to that point. They bunted on him a couple times too to start the game, which was interesting. Yep. So that definitely I'm sure sat well with the big man. But honestly, I'm like, okay, I would do it too. But they, interestingly enough, it worked twice and then they didn't do it for the rest of the game, which is baffling me. I don't know.
If I was a Twins fan, I'd be screaming at the top of my lungs at my TV, bunt, 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 you assholes, bunt, he can't field his position.
Once you lose game one, everything is on the table. Once you lost that first game, you got to come in and win the second game because you got to win the next 2 games in order to be in this thing. You can't lose 2 of 3. You can't lose 3 of 3. That's for damn sure. You got to go in there and walk out with 2 wins at least at Yankee Stadium. So, yeah, I don't know why they weren't trying to scratch anything across.
I was thoroughly unimpressed by Jose Berrios, who is the Twins, quote, number 2 pitcher. I was listening to, I think Michael Kay was saying that analysts have thought maybe the Twins would consider Berrios to for a wild card start if they needed to. And they'd be comfortable doing it. But I was unimpressed with him. The Yankees got his pitch count up. They walked 4 times, and he was out of there by the 4th inning.
Yeah, that's the beauty about this team. This team is they can definitely work a count. And I guess that's kind of going against what I said earlier with young guys going up there and swinging. I mean, there are some – these young guys are some disciplined guys. Aaron Judge has come back to that. He fell off the wagon for a little bit being a disciplined – batter, but it seems like he's going for, you know, the right side of the field again. It looks like he's trying to kind of inside out that ball and go the other way and try to lay off those outside pitches. But then you got the veteran guys like Ellsbury, who's freaking locked in. Like,
my God,
like it's 2004. I don't know. This dude is locked
was not in
like,
the league in 2004
or whenever whenever the hell he was on the Red Sox at that point. This dude was
2011. You're thinking of the 2011 season when he suspiciously hit 30 home runs.
But this dude is like locked in like crazy, and the rest of these guys were working the count. They obviously had a very good game plan against him to work the count and to get his pitch count up, and it worked.
You're right. Ellsbury is completely locked in. Wouldn't it be sweet, sweet irony, or maybe not sweet irony, just irony that if Ellsbury was a main reason why the Yankees made a deep playoff run?
It would be amazing. It would pay off his contract, and it would justify his contract 1,000%. For the short term for everybody.
Oh yeah, you perform in October. It doesn't matter what they're paying you. Some numbers on Ellsbury since August 26th, which is pretty much when he took over for Hicks. He's batting .397, 29 for 73, with 12 extra base hits. Just for fun, I looked up how many extra base hits he had prior to August 26th, and he had 18. So he's almost matched, not almost matched, but 12 compared to 18. But 18 was over the course of 4 months.
Bottom line is the guy's locked in at the right time. Aaron Hicks, who I've heard is taking some swings and such. I mean, come on, he's not coming back. I don't see how they could possibly bring back, even if he was healthy. I don't know how he could. You could even remotely think about bringing him in for any kind of a playoff run. The guy's gonna need to get at bats, get back, and he's gonna need like a brief spring training basically to get back. So I just think he's running out of time at this point. So Ellsbury's the guy. I mean, he's gonna be the guy. His confidence is at a very, very high level at this point. And he looks like he's having fun. The emotionless outfielder that we've seen for a while playing this team is actually looking like he's having fun. He's buying in to the thumbs down, to the camaraderie on the rest of the team, and that's a good thing. If I almost called him Johnny Damon just then. If Jacoby Ellsbury is buying into the team camaraderie, you know you got everybody.
It's amazing what not getting booed in front of 50,000 people will do to your psyche.
Why didn't he do this a long time ago then?
No clue. You mentioned briefly Aaron Judge is looking patient again. He had two home runs in the series, both to right field. The one on Wednesday, which got the Yankees back in the game, was right down the right field line. It was his 45th homer of the season. He's reached the 100 RBI milestone. He's already walked 100 times. 100 walks, 100 RBIs, 45 home runs as a rookie. Big pitcher, grand scheme of things. Unbelievably ridiculous season for Judge. In the month of September, he's batting .262, which if his batting average is at .262, I think you and I are both okay with it. And he's got 8 homers and 19 RBIs.
I'm really happy that he was able to come back and find his swing and end the season on a good note. Granted, there's another week and a half still, but you know, it looks like he really has come back and found that approach. And I truly believe that it was an approach thing. Like there was something going on where he was pulling out too much, trying to pull the ball to left field, and for whatever reason got off the approach to go the other way. And that's really where he needs to be. I wholeheartedly believe that. Because what we're doing is we're seeing success now with him going the other way. So awesome to see him back because, you know, it would have been kind of a little bit of a mark, a little bit of a black mark for everybody. It would have given everybody that freaking thing to say, oh, but it was only the first half. So he's kind of shutting everybody up by coming back and in very meaningful baseball, playing good baseball.
Yeah, he's not 100%. He's never going to be 100% back to what he was in April, May, June. That was a ridiculous
stretch.
But
we agree on that. We're not expecting that.
But what he's doing now is still very, very productive, a huge asset to the Yankees. And I think if he continues this over the next 10 games, MVP is back in play for him.
Yeah, it's very interesting that that's even a complete conversation that Aaron Judge, one, he's got the rookie of the year locked up. I mean, people kept saying Benintendi, get the F out of here. Benintendi's not even, can't hold his jock at this point. Aaron Judge is a man amongst boys when it comes to Benintendi. Please. The man is also the first guy to hit 100 RBIs. I tweeted this out the other day. In the Yankee uniform since 2013. That's crazy.
He's the first guy to have 100 RBIs since 2013 as a Yankee. Huh. Wow. What was that, Cano?
Robbie Cano.
Yeah.
Year before that?
That's crazy. Even in 2015, you'd figure like the offense had a great year in 2015. McCann
was, I think he hit like 97 at one of those points. But yeah, they haven't had 100 RBI guys since Robbie Cano in 13. And then 12 was Granderson. I think there was a couple guys. I think the Sheriff may have gotten it as well. And then the year before that, when I was looking up, there were 3 guys. So they definitely hit. You could see where the players got old, you know.
Yeah,
like after 2013, it's like, oh, you know, yep. Like everybody's body just broke down. Cano got you know, is out of town, and then everybody is we're waiting for this power. Where do the Bronx Bombers go? And the overwhelming glaring problem with the team and the construction of the team at that point was so freaking apparent because they couldn't score unless the ball left the ballpark and nobody was hitting the ball out of the ballpark.
Yeah, exactly. So Severino today, we sort of talked about it earlier, how the Yankees shuffled their rotation. On the last episode, we talked about how the Yankees were hiding him from Minnesota. Now, they're not hiding from Minnesota. He pitched on Wednesday, did not pitch great. 3 innings, 71 pitches. He was, I don't want to say hit hard, because there was a few balls that just squeaked through the infield, but he didn't look good. Maurer had a really tough at-bat against him that was kind of a back-breaking at-bat for Severino. And the Yankees, Girardi yanked him after that third inning. I think they were overthinking the whole rotation and Severino thing. What they're doing now is just getting him on schedule, and I think that's probably the right move rather than just hiding him from Minnesota, because I don't even know how much that really helps.
Well, conspiracy theory, two. One, Severino's said that he wants to stay on schedule. That's where he feels most comfortable, so there was some miscommunication either with the media and Joe, or Joe with Severino, or somebody wasn't talking to somebody about that, because that's pretty important to know that your pitcher is more comfortable at a certain point, you know, pretty much what he's been doing all season long. And two, conspiracy theory is Severino still did not show against Minnesota, came out, threw some nonsense and be like, okay, you think this is what you're going to get.
I love
on
this
Tuesday night. You think you're going to get this, but not so much. You're going to get a very different guy. You're going to get a man possessed on Tuesday night. What I'm showing you today is a very, is the 2016 version of Luis Severino, the starter.
I love this. He's rope-a-doping him.
Yeah.
And he knew the offense was like, don't worry, Sevy, go out and do it. We're going to put up 11 runs today. No worries. So that's a great theory.
I think it was a bold move. One that I think will pay off.
Let's see if it pays off. The communication thing though is weird because so Girardi never came out and said that we're hiding Severino from Minnesota. That was all speculation by the media. But he did line up the rotation, so Severino was not going to pitch against Minnesota. So it was obvious to connect the dots there and say, okay, they're hiding him. So, but don't you think if before he set his rotation, which was Garcia on Monday, Sabathia on Tuesday, and then Tanaka was supposed to pitch on Wednesday, don't you think before Girardi publicly said that, he would have at least gone to Severino and said, hey, here's my plan. Are you comfortable with this?
Yeah, and in all honesty, that conversation very well could have happened, and Girardi just threw something out. Maybe there was some gamesmanship with Molitor. I don't know. There could have been a million things that happened behind the doors that we don't know about, that Severino did have that conversation with Joe, and he was just kind of putting it down. And maybe it was a fluid situation. Maybe it was like, oh, let's see how your bullpen session does between starts, and you can tell me then. But for now, we'll put Tanaka in that spot. You know what I mean? Like, there could have been a million different conversations that could have led to Girardi doing what he did with the initial rollout of the way that the rotation was going to go for the Twin Series. So I'm not going to look too much into it. I think there was a communication thing more on the media side, honestly, that blew up more. Probably that's a higher percentage chance than it was on the Yankee side.
We got the question on Twitter right before we started recording that should we be concerned with the Severino start? And I am not concerned at all. If anything, this makes me more confident for Severino against a Twins matchup in the wild card because we've seen Sevy get pissed off before. And when he's pissed off, Severino is good Severino.
Yeah, I don't think it matters. I don't think they saw, I mean, they saw three innings of this guy. Wasn't great. Maurer had a great at-bat against him. I mean, that was, what, 13 pitches. So they did see a lot at that point. I don't know. There were some soft hit balls getting with the runners on. And then there were some timely hits. Maurer had a hit. And then, what was it, Polanco who had the next RBI that he could have gotten out of that inning with that, even just a Maurer. I think there was one out at that point and only one run scored. Bases were still loaded, I believe. And then Polanco scored two on his hit. But so he could have gotten out of it, but Polanco jumped on that. I believe it was the first pitch.
Yeah.
It was timely hitting. Severino didn't have it. I'm not going to read too much into it.
Yeah. Couple more notes from this Minnesota series. First of all, Chase Headley got hit in the dick, so he's probably got some black and blue balls. And also, Didi passed Jeter by hitting his 25th home run.
Yeah, we expected Didi to do this, right? This was something that we talked about. He had 24, 25 was almost inevitable. And he does it in grand fashion, a three-run shot, throws the bat by accident, or I don't know if it just comes out of his hand, and nails the catcher, stops, apologizes, then runs to first base. It's a great
the best.
It's a great video. It really is. Like, this guy just passed Jeter's mark for most home runs by a shortstop in Yankees freaking history. And he's like stopping to like, oh, my bad, dude. Like, the manners came first before the rest of the stuff. He's just such a nice dude. Him and Chase Headley are like the nicest guys in the world. Didi just performs so well. And, you know, in game, I mean, like, he's the competitor's even like, sorry, man, my bad. Didn't mean to throw the bat at you, but let me go get these three runs and knock you guys out of the playoffs.
He would be at 30 home runs if he didn't miss the entire month of April. And yeah. I think you need to, not you, but people need to take a step back and consider a 30 home run shortstop is freaking insane.
It's phenomenal. I mean, that's A-Rod. That's what A-Rod was doing. A-Rod was putting up 30 home runs, 100 RBIs. That's where Didi would be right now. He would be around that 30 home run mark and around the 100 RBI mark. He would be right around those two marks. And when you see that type of level from output from a shortstop, you're talking about like back in the day when the shortstop was a power position. It's crazy.
Maybe he will get some MVP votes, but I think Didi deserves MVP votes. He's not going to win it. He shouldn't win it. But he needs to be recognized for how important he is to the Yankees. And I think you and I said didn't we say he's the second most important position player behind Gary Sanchez going into the season?
Yeah, and you know, it's crucial that he continued to show that he was improving. I mean, I think he had such a good year last year. There was really nothing to say that he was going to fall back from that. I mean, everything he was doing was just, you could tell his game was getting better. It wasn't like one of those fluky years where he had just kind of weird inflated numbers. You could just tell he was getting better as a player. And I think that started with him hitting left-handed pitching, because when he came to the Yankees, he was abysmal hitting left-handed pitching. Who did I hear the story from? I think it was Teixeira or somebody, where they, when Didi came over to the Yankees, he was like one of the worst at left-handed pitching, and they would break it down to like very minimal stuff, like little league shit, with him trying to get him to hit left-handed pitching, and he just kept working at it and working at it and working at it and working at it. So this is a testament to him putting in the time and perfecting his craft as a well-rounded batter from the left side. So, man, it's really cool to see good people that do awesome things off the field and on the field succeed. And when he's on your team, makes it that much better.
If you want to hear us also talk about Didi for 10 extra minutes, go listen to the last episode, because we were gushing about Didi in that episode too. Final thing, you mentioned it. I did meet Johnny Damon on Monday night. That was the reason I was at the game. I was there for an event. We thought I was going to maybe get an interview that we were going to play on the podcast with Johnny Damon, but he had to back out last minute. I did get a picture with him though, and I did make sure to tell him that I will never forgive him for that Grand Slam in 2004. And he had a great response to it. He goes, "Yeah, all I've done for that city of Boston, and they boot me out of town."
I love it. I love bitter, that there's bitter still bitterness. Shit. Yeah, still bitterness, because you know he's not going back. I don't know how many promotional things he's doing in Boston. Probably not that many, right? I mean, he's still,
there for the 2004 like World Series.
Yeah, but that's different. I'm talking like he's at Yankee Stadium for, this was an event. This was a corporate event that we kind of had a connection to. And Johnny Damon's the guy going into Yankee Stadium as a Yankee. He's not doing those type of things in Boston, from what right. I understand. Maybe I'm wrong, but it's I have a feeling a lot of people up in Boston still now, even after 2004, because they're freaking spoiled after 2004, when that was like the greatest year in Boston history. And they forget about that because they have won since then. And Johnny Damon is dead to them.
It's interesting how Damon's career, because he had one of the most backbreaking moments, if you're a Yankees fan, in Yankees history, that 2004 Grand Slam. And now he shows up to Old Timers Day. Like, could you have imagined back then when he had the long hair and the beard and he was one of the freaking idiots with Kevin Millar, that we'd be inviting Johnny Damon to Old Timers Day and giving him a standing ovation? Because he's pretty loved in Yankees communities.
Yeah, it's weird. I honestly... I never really warmed up to him as being a Yankee. You know, maybe later I finally did, 2009, like, okay. But I never really warmed up. It was for whatever reason. Maybe I was just at that point in my life where I was just bitter and like pissed off at Boston still, and just like I hated them with a passion. So I never really got over that whole thing. But yeah, he's definitely a guy that people have admiration for in New York, and talk about a complete 180.
Yeah. Good stuff. Anything else you want to say before we get out of here?
You know, this has been this last series was a lot of fun. The Yankees got to keep grinding and putting their heads down, man, and just keep playing. This whole thumbs down thing has taken the world by storm. We put out a bunch of t-shirts. Go look them up. Frazier took a picture with the entire team with the shirt. So they're embracing it. And I love that they do this type of thing where they get t-shirts and they take pictures together and like just shit like that to show the world like, hey, we're together. It's just proof that these guys are really, really gelling. And it doesn't matter if you think it's stupid or if you don't think it's stupid or whatever you think about this whole thumbs down thing. You like the guy, you don't like that, you're sick of the guy, whatever. The bottom line is the team is rallying around it and it's working inside the clubhouse. And I think most of the fan base does like it, but inside the clubhouse, it's working. And little dumb shit like this can be so instrumental for a team getting very hot and gelling in September and into October. So I don't hate it till after the season.
I haven't seen anyone really hitting on the thumbs down thing.
I've seen a couple people like, okay, I'm sick of it. But
was it after the Yankees put the big fatso on the scoreboard when Todd Frazier hit a home run the other night?
I think most of it has come because that guy is stepping out. Like the Yes Network did an interview with him and did that little bit. Yeah. You know, I think that is what's like, okay, maybe they're just more annoyed. Like, all right, guy, go fade back into, you know, your apartment in Queens and, you know, we'll carry on with a thumbs down, but it's really not you. It's just a thumbs down.
But here's the thing. Why are we as fans mad about the Yankees or the Yes Network trying to capitalize on a viral thing that happened on Twitter? We're all doing the same thing. We Bronx Pinstripes are doing the same thing. Every other fan's tweeting out that dude's gif and thumbs down signs. The Yankees are just doing the same thing. Fans get so mad over the dumbest shit.
Honestly, I think it's probably also a lot of just like other fans leaking into the Yankees Twitter world that are just disguised at this point, just completely trolling. The majority of the fans that I have talked to on Twitter and just seen doing things, everybody's loving it. I mean, it's, again, it doesn't matter what it is, whether it's, you know, the thumbs down or some other slogan or whatever it is, it's working in the clubhouse, and that's the most important thing. And they're buying it, and that's all that matters.
Amen to that. 10 games before the wild card. Hopefully they've got the division. We'll talk to you guys in a few days.
Hold on just one second. One thing we forgot to get to, and it's because we get wrapped up in baseball that we forgot about this one topic that we really wanted to talk about. So I wanted to jump on before we threw out the podcast today and just talk quickly about that little girl who got hit in what it looked like, I guess the head or somewhere in a very bad spot. If you were watching the game, you could tell the immediate impact of what happened on the players' faces, just the way that it was written all over their face, what had happened, that it was a bad injury. It was if you're not familiar, it was the foul ball off the bat of Todd Frazier, who instantly just had this look like, you know, the worst thing in the world happened. You saw Matt Holliday on first base, you know, having tears in his eyes, obviously probably thinking of his kids in the stands. Look, there's no reason at this point for that net to not be pulled across and extended down by towards the dugout. These foul balls are going in the stands like rockets. If you look down for 1 second, people are like, oh, pay attention. No, you can't pay attention every second of the game. There are kids doing things that kids will do. It's just not practical by saying pay attention every second. This type of thing can happen so damn fast. Major League Baseball needs to extend the nets. There's no reason for them not to. People pay a ridiculous amount of money to sit behind home plate because they like it. There's a net there. What's the problem? Crowd safety, children's safety is absolutely paramount in this situation. And there's really no reason for it. I don't know if Major League Baseball or Randy Levine or whomever is waiting for something very, very bad to happen, because it very well might have. We don't really know the complete outcome of what the girl's status is. You're getting reports in saying maybe surgery. Who knows? I'm not going to speculate on that. There's obviously privacy with her condition. So we hope Andrew and I know are on the same page of this. Our best wishes to the little girl and her family. And hopefully the Yankees and the rest of baseball, whoever doesn't have these nets, can just open their eyes. It's not that big of a deal. Extend the nets. All right, guys, we'll talk to you.
Hey, guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.